Our final speaker for the day is John Brogdon. I'm sure that for all of you who are from Sydney or New South Wales, you'll be very familiar with John, who was, of course, the youngest leader of the opposition at only age 33, I think. John is now CEO of the Financial Services Council. I tried to count their submission, but it was actually in 7 different chapters and books. So obviously John's thought deeply and heavily about this inquiry, and I think it's going to be very interesting to hear his perspectives, not only from wealth management, super, but of course John has a background with the health insurance industry as well. So please give him a warm round of welcome, John Brogdon.
Well, got our advice from, I'm very pleased to indicate that I did not get my advice from my mother-in-law, Steve, who up until about 5 years ago thought she could only use the ATM at her own branch after and during business hours. So I'm very pleased that we didn't take that advice. Look, we've covered a range of areas. The Financial Services Council covers 5 industries: the advice sector, funds management, superannuation, life insurance and trust companies. But for the purpose of today, I guess I want to talk about superannuation in particular. The biggest single event since the Wallace Inquiry was the world financial crisis. The biggest single change to the Australian financial system, and in my view to the Australian economy, since the Wallace Inquiry is the growth of superannuation. Presently sitting at $1.75 trillion, larger than the GDP of the country, larger than the capitalisation of the stock exchange, the fourth largest private retirement system in the world, and funds under management in Australia sit at $2.3 trillion, now the third largest pool of managed funds in the world. This enormous amount of capital will only grow. We estimate by 2020 there'll be some $3 trillion in superannuation, and by 2030, $5+ trillion in superannuation. It will, over that period of time, outstrip the assets and the size of the banking system in Australia. The approach that David Murray has taken, and this reflects Ian's point earlier, is what is the allocative efficiency of the superannuation sector in Australia? In shorthand, is it working? Is its changes to the flow of capital since its introduction in a compulsory sense 22 years ago working? Now, taking away the subjectivity of that question, the only real way to examine that is in a theoretical sense. Unless we're going to close down the superannuation system and let the money flow elsewhere, we'll never actually definitively know whether it's working. So there are some pretty clear findings that we have come across, that we've received through our research, and that we've submitted to the Murray Review. The first one is that Australia's savings are 3 times larger than they would have been if not for a compulsory super system. So we're fools to imagine that Australians would have funded themselves in preparation for retirement in the large volume that they have if not for the fact that they were compelled by law, effectively, to do so. The second thing is, how does the superannuation system interact with the banking system? Well, fully 1/3 of the capital of the banking system in Australia is owned by the superannuation system, by superannuants. $200 billion of the super system is terms on deposit in the banking system. So our argument would be a large amount of indirect and direct superannuation funds flow into the banking sector that then allow the banking sector to resubmit those funds back into the economy. The interesting thing is, where will superannuation move into the future as it continues to grow? Now, any piece of research that we do indicates that superannuation is anywhere between 80 and 85% popular. Do you support superannuation in the Australian community? Indeed, the increase to 12% is as popular. But I think when people come to realise that the superannuation system is going to change so much, that popularity may be put at risk somewhat. One of the biggest single changes will be that as that system grows, it will look overseas for more and more investment. In fact, the asset concentration risk in Australia, because of the size of the Australian economy relative to the size of the superannuation system, will be a significant reason to push overseas. But one piece of research done by Rodney Maddock, who I'm sure Ian would know from Monash University, relates to the continued desire for the superannuation system to look for equity investments. Not equities, but equity investments. And one of the interesting outcomes of the research that's been done, and this is a one man's view, but one that we find fascinating, we put into the market, we put into David Murray's review, is the rebirth of the securitisation market in Australia. And if you like, it's a partnership between superannuation and the banking sector, the ADI sector. We will have so much money available that we look for very long-term, very predictable assets in Australia with good, strong, predictable returns. You can't go far past home mortgages in Australia when you're looking for that. I mean, Australians have a cultural connection to housing that is probably second only to the UK in terms of the percentage of home ownership in the world. And I like to say Australians would eat baked beans. I used to say dog food, but actually baked beans are cheaper than dog food. But Australians will do anything before they default on their mortgage. We all know it. We'll do anything. The last thing you want to do is default on your mortgage. You will get down to your last penny and you will make every effort to repay your mortgage. So superannuation, looking for a strong investment. We don't want to be banks. So we would partner with banks in providing the capital that is securitised and loaned out. We play a role. The banks play a role in distributing that back into the economy. We've also taken an opportunity to look at where the superannuation assets of Australians are currently invested. Fully half of all superannuation funds are invested into equities. Two-thirds, or should I say 60% more appropriately, of that in Australian equities and 40% in global equities. Now, we took an opportunity to do some comparison because you'll note when the market's down, people come out and say there's too much superannuation to invest in equities. That sort of goes away when the market picks up. But if you compare us internationally, Hong Kong sits at about 60% of its pension assets invested into the equities market. UK, about 35-40, US, about 40-45. So we're not a significant outlier. You then move into no great particular order into cash, fixed interest, direct property, infrastructure, etc. So you can see the push to non-equities investments will grow as the size of those pool of funds grow. So the real question is, and one question that will come under pressure, that will put superannuation and the sector under pressure, is what is the purpose of superannuation? You don't have to go far to get people who will tell you the purpose of superannuation is to grow the country, to grow the economy, to build bridges, to build sewers, to build water systems, to build roads. It's here to grow the economy. I have a very unhelpful job when it comes to this point, which is saying to people, the role of superannuation is not to grow the economy. The role of superannuation is to secure the retirement of Australians by investing in the best investment with the best possible return. If that happens to be a Chinese bridge rather than a bridge in Australia, then the money flows to where it should go. Now, that's going to be a hard message for the industry as we move forward, because Australians have an enormous expectation that this growing pool of funds will help to grow the country. And in part, that's where David Murray's question lies. Indeed, I was somewhat alarmed, I don't know what your view was, Ian, when David Murray actually talked about mandated investing about 2 weeks ago. I was mostly alarmed because I told my board the week before, oh, there's no way David Murray will ever talk about mandating investment. How would he ever do that? And of course, then he said it the next week. But we are on the cusp of a debate about whether we should begin to mandate investments, and it's never far away from the surface. Now, that really does begin to take control of the role of superannuation and its capital flow back into the economy. So I wanted to talk a bit about what we're doing on superannuation. I want to talk briefly about life insurance, because I know that's a sector in which many of you work. The life insurance sector in Australia presently is in difficult times, as many of you would know. We're hoping it's cyclical, and we'll hope we'll see our way through the end with some market, regulatory and industry solutions. And the FSC is working with the sector on that front and on behalf of the sector. We see an opportunity for much more out of life insurance in Australia. Now, I accept when I use this example that health insurance is both community rated and heavily subsidised. But we believe there's an opportunity for life insurance to be to disability income what health insurance is to public health expenditure. So just as health insurance, by theory, helps to reduce the overall cost and balance out the allocation of costs between public and private health, we believe there's an opportunity for private health insurance to grow its role in being the private sector balance to public sector expenditure on disability. And if you've been listening to Joe Hockey over the last 2 to 3 weeks, you'll begin to see the frightening picture he's painting in terms of the escalating cost of disability. So rather than stand back, we're encouraging a much greater opportunity for life insurance and the business that it provides. I might just conclude on 2 points. The first one is to say that I think, like the rest of the speakers, we broadly endorse the Twin Peaks system in Australia. We don't suggest that there be any radical architecture. I note with interest that Tony Shepherd and the Audit, Commission of Audit last week took an axe to ASIC. I thought that was quite interesting, but I'm not sure that's about to get adopted. From our perspective, the Twin Peaks just about work properly, although with a rush of legislation over the last couple of years, there is some regulatory crossover, and we remain very opposed to the level of regulatory activism that we see go on from time to time. And we are somewhat traditionalist in that it should be the government, the parliament, that makes the law, and they are, those laws, by and large, are interpreted by the regulators. We think it's better for certainty for the industry, consumers, and indeed certainty in the role of the regulators. The last thing I want to talk about is the opportunities for increased trade for financial services in Australia. The industry in which we all work is the largest sector of the Australian economy, larger than mining. That's why Steve made the defection from being a geologist to a banker, obviously. Larger than mining, larger than agriculture, larger than manufacturing. And we do a lousy job as an industry, frankly, in promoting that to the mums and dads of Australia. But if you then look at those other industries who have a very strong trade focus, we, by and large, particularly in wealth management, have a pretty poor focus on trade. We've talked a lot about Australia becoming a global financial centre. Now, that means 1,000 things to 1,000 people. We've tried to move our language to talk more about trade opportunities. And chief amongst them is the creation of an Asian Region Funds Passport, which allows passporting of funds through mutual recognition through the Asian region to provide many more opportunities to export the world-class funds management expertise we have in Australia. So from all of those examples I've given you today, we have taken the Murray Inquiry, as an opportunity to push the policy agenda. Not simply to comment on where we've been and where we are, but to push the policy agenda. If I might say very privately amongst 400 of my closest friends, knowing it won't go outside this room, my biggest concern about the Murray Inquiry is this. And I was in year five in 1979 at St Patrick's College, Strathfield, with the Christian Brothers, where I didn't learn to read or write, but I do know how to take a beating. Anyway, so I don't know, and in fact I asked John Howard this question, and I still didn't get the answer I was looking for, which is, was there an incredibly pent-up demand for deregulation of the banking sector in 1977, 78, 79, etc.? He gave me a hint there was. And was there an incredibly pent-up demand for a Twin Peaks regulatory system in, you know, 94, 95, 96, 97, in the run-up to Wallace? There is no great pent-up demand for a few things to change or a major change that will come out of the Murray Inquiry. So my greatest concern is they have to find something big to mark themselves with. And that's, I know it won't leave this room and David won't find out about it, but that is my great concern. Now, the flip side of that is this is one of the rarest of all things, and this is an inquiry from a government, and the government has no expectations and has given no, in my view, hidden instructions to David Murray as to what he wants. So it is a genuinely open inquiry. We've taken that opportunity of an open inquiry to try and push the regulatory and push the policy agenda to give greater opportunities for our sector to continue to be the largest part of the economy and to continue to grow the Australian economy and be recognised for the benefits that we provide rather than seen sometimes for the negatives that are so easily pushed back on our industry that aren't on other large industries. So we've decided to push out with it. As you know, we'll see something mid-year from David Murray. There'll be replies back again and submissions again in the third quarter. It's my view that when we see a submission at the end of the year, Ian has great experience having been through this. Government will respond sometime during 2015. Legislation maybe 2015-16. Unless there are urgent issues that come out of the Murray inquiry, I don't see any commencement of legislative change until well into the second term of the next term of the government or the next term of the parliament. So we're some way away from seeing these changes take effect. But it's an important inquiry. It's been a great inquiry for consultants, Ian. They've all done very well. But it's been a great opportunity, I think, for the industry and for the hundreds of other people who've made submissions to push in to a timely debate about Australia's financial system. Thank you.